Hello and welcome to the Come Fly With Me podcast, where I discuss dream holiday destinations and career plans with my guests. I'm your host and pilot, Kenneth Fairweather, and today I'll be talking with English teacher, economics graduate, and football fan, Simon Harris. Simon is from Perth, Western Australia, and currently resides in Saigon, also known as Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam, where he teaches English. Join me as we take a look at Simon's early life, love of Arsenal Football Club, hear about his teaching experience, and discover what he wants to do whilst in his dream destination, Spain. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Enjoy the ride. Welcome to Check-In, Simon. Where are we going today?
Thanks, Ken. I particularly love like the south of Spain, like kind of like south of Madrid, like going down to Mediterranean there. Like there's so many beautiful cities like Cadiz, Madrid. It's called Andalusia. Do you know it?
Yeah, I've heard of Andalusia. I've not been there myself, yeah. But yeah.
Sevilla, Cordoba, all of these places are, yeah, they're very beautiful. And it's very hot down there. Like it's definitely got like an arid climate, I guess. But like, and then you get to the beaches and they're very beautiful. And also the people are very like, you know, like Spanish people are very easygoing, and it's like a relaxed kind of place. Like, I went there a while ago and I traveled there, and it was, yeah, like I just felt so like, yeah, just felt so happy there. It was just so good. And it's quite cheap as well, especially for European standards, like compared to like UK or even like, you know, like the big cities. So, and Madrid as well is really cool. Yeah, prefer Madrid over Barca. I'm a Madrid over Barca guy. But Barca is more like, yeah, Barca is definitely also beautiful too, but just got the edge.
What are your fondest memories of growing up in Perth?
Fondest memories of Perth? My school experience was generally really good. I really enjoyed like playing sport, like playing football, playing cricket, you know, hanging out with all the guys, you know, like some of our mates. And yeah, like I felt like we had a pretty good general all-round education, with like plenty of like space and things like that to like kind of do whatever we wanted to do. And I thought that was really, like, I really appreciate that now. Like, you know, I feel like having that time to, you know, play sport, like, almost every day and kind of, like, go to the beach and kind of have that relaxed kind of thing was really great. Like, you know, that I think growing up in Perth is pretty good. It's a pretty good place to grow up. Not necessarily for your whole life, though, but it's a good place. Like, you get that education which is great, and you make good friends and you make life friends. And yeah, generally, you know, you get to go to beautiful places and you get to travel and stuff like that. So yeah, I think, yeah, that was probably the best thing about growing up in Perth.
Now that we know a bit about Simon's early life, let's get to know when he found his calling for teaching. This is a final boarding call for Simon Harris. Simon, your flight to Spain awaits. When did you know you wanted to teach?
I think after when I finished my studies, and then I went and worked in an insurance broking company in West Perth for like about 6 months, and because I kind of didn't quite know what I wanted to do at that point. I'd say I didn't mind insurance. And, you know, it was something that I could have probably got into. But, yeah, I decided that it probably wasn't for me. And I didn't really want to do the office job. So I ended up, like, going down to Margaret River and, like, working on viticulture, like in wineries and stuff. And I used to like teach like some backpackers English for free. And I also got a lot of suggestions from people to move into that field, because that's something that might have suited me. And I agreed eventually. And so I'd say it was like early to mid 2018. And then I kind of looked up like teaching abroad because I knew it was something that I'd considered doing. And then I saw like some options. And then I was like, oh, I'll just, you know, be a great opportunity to get some experience. And then, you know, use that experience to kind of come back and, you know, and be a teacher if you like in Australia or whatnot. So that was kind of like the motivation was to get like some experience. Yeah. So I'd say like, you know, 2018.
And was it TEFL teaching English as a foreign language? Was that the program that you looked into in Vietnam?
Yeah, like I looked into like where was a good place to do it. And there are a few options, especially in Asia, but there's options all over the world really. And they are different. The one thing that I knew was like I knew that I'd already been to Vietnam like quite recently before that, and it was very brief, but I really, really liked it. And yeah, I sort of thought, yeah, like that could work. And I also looked at the pay, and I was also very kind of attracted by that as well. And I also like the kind of like culture for teaching English. And so yeah, I was like, yeah, like just go, like just do it. The motivation was like from an experience point of view, and actually because it's in such high demand here that they will take you without any experience, expect to kind of like train you, and that's what happened to me. Like I didn't have much experience as a teacher, but I was able to within very little time be able to get into work and things like that. So that was the attraction, and it kind of worked. Yeah.
So you've learned a lot on the job then.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's definitely, it was a steep learning curve at the very start. And it definitely was sometimes I really didn't know what I was doing and, you know, stuff like this. But, you know, over time and with a lot of, with people helping me and like teachers, you know, telling me what to do. Yeah, like it built up over time, and you know, now I consider myself to be like quite experienced. Yeah.
And I imagine you'd meet quite a lot of people from around the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of people. So in our school, we like in our center, we have like the Vietnamese teachers will teach half the classes, and the foreign teacher will teach the other half. So you have a lot of Vietnamese teachers. You also have like a lot of foreign teachers from places like so many different countries, like UK, Ireland, US, Canada, Philippines, Australia. Even we have a guy from Kyrgyzstan who's just come. So they really demand native speakers, so that's the number one for the foreign teacher. But to be honest, like it doesn't work. Like they you can at my company, like you can come from any country really, and you can work there, like as long as you have the qualification. Yeah.
What's your company, Simon?
It's called VUS. It's a very big school, and it's a famous one in Vietnam. And it just has like many, many centers throughout the city and in up in Hanoi and you know all around the country. Yeah, it's a very big like company. It's a massive company.
What would you say are sort of the biggest things that you've learned in terms of teaching English? I imagine it would be like a very useful thing with improving your communication to be able to try and communicate a different language to somebody that's not as familiar with that language.
Your interpersonal skills and like personal skills are crucial actually. Like, it's, you really have to, you know, be able to communicate. Yeah, and just slow down mostly. Like, you need to be able to ask the right questions for that level, and, you know, be able to understand like how they react. That would be like the most important thing, I think. You know, and then being making them have fun and making them actually enjoy learning a second language. That, you know, if it's not easy, and the more like engaging you make it, like, the generally speaking, like, the more the kids will be happy to learn with you. Yeah.
And what sort of things do to try and make it as engaging as possible?
We do like a lot of like activities, so we try and break it up. Like, we either play, like, for example, vocabulary activities, which can be pretty fun, like, and they're not too taxing. So, like, games, and then online games, which, like, can, let, you know, you there's quite advanced online games to kind of like, make strategies for them, and then they answer questions. So you kind of tricking the students to have, like, to play this game, but there's a lot of like repetition and, like, you know, content being learned at the same time. So that is the key. So it's just like, you know, balancing up like ways to keep them interested, I guess. Yeah.
And what do you find the biggest challenges to keep your students interested in the learning process?
Well, we teach different age groups, so I teach from like 3 years old all the way up to like adults, basically. So massively depends on the age. Definitely the younger ones are more easily engaged. Like, they whatever you do, even if it's a silly face or you do some kind of game, they will respond in a positive way most of the time. So it's easy, right? Like, the older ones, they you know, they look at you in your eye, and like, so you got to be a bit more like pedagogical. Like, you've got to be able to teach them, like, and be confident in the classroom, and like, don't put up with anything like that they do with you. And then they usually respond as well, and you've got to make it interesting. But if they sense like until you get confident, like, they will pick on you a little bit. You've just got to be, because, you know, they might be paying for the course, so they might be they have a certain expectation. But if you can prove a little, like, the respect level kind of thing, and then you do, like, they can see you put in a lot of effort into the class, like, before, I think you can't go wrong. I think the it's I think that's enough, really. Yeah.
As we begin our ascent into the clouds, let's discover what inspired Simon to allow his teaching career to flourish into what it is now. When did you feel like your teaching career started to pick up momentum?
I'd say, like, I started to feel more confident after like a year or two. And now that I've started my master's, I feel very confident when it comes to teaching ESL. And I think that was the moment, was like when I was trying to do, you know, go get something, like a master's in, you know, in pedagogy or in teaching. I felt at that point I'd gained enough experience, and yeah, and I felt that, you know, the thing, for the most part, things are going pretty well. Yeah. So, but there were some times that I, you know, I didn't perform as well. So it was, yeah, it was a slow process. Yeah.
What do you see as the big differences between the schooling systems in Vietnam compared with in Perth?
They're different. They're very different. Yeah. Yeah, I'd say, like, Australia's got more of like a well-rounded kind of approach to education, like, but how you have different things, like your sport, like, you always get given, like, leeway with like sport and public speaking and excursions and extracurricular. And when whereas in Vietnam and in Asia in general, it's very strict and it's quite a lot of pressure like on the students to perform academically only. It's a very academically driven kind of thing. So it's very different. And yeah, about us, yeah, Australia was like, you know, we took academics seriously as well, but we saw that there were other things that you have to consider. Yeah, in Vietnam and in Asia, it much less so. And you know, the kids have to take lots of different extra academic schools, like go to English class, go to physics, go to you know, go to writing school. You know, most of them just do English, and so they'll go to school and then they'll go to to an English center. That will be pretty much what, you know, they're at school at 12 hours a day. And also in a public school in Ho Chi Minh, like I've never taught in a public school because you know, I've been at VUS in a kindergarten, but they're not very good. Like there's usually like 50 kids in a class, and it's you cannot like can you know as a teacher like you can't control these kids, and there's no resources like there are in the private ones. So like a public school has a low quality education, and it's quite a confronting kind of thing for me because the student like with all this pressure, like they don't really seem to have it right. Like I can't see how like some chalk and a board and like 50 or 60 kids in a class, like it yeah it doesn't really make it's quite difficult to comprehend. Yeah, so you know, and as a result, like you know, the education can be could be so much better, you know. So yeah, they've really gotta improve that. Yeah.
Yeah, so in terms of VUS, how many people do you have in your classroom?
Anywhere under like 20, so like
Okay,
20
so it's
to
a considerable difference.
considerable difference. Yeah. We have like a lot more resources as well. Like we could have more, we could have a lot more, but generally speaking, you know, they would have more resources than we did when we were at Christchurch kind of thing, like because it's obviously it's a lot more recent, a lot more contemporary. But yeah, the resources are pretty good there, and they can pretty much get like whatever they need, like whiteboard, and then you'll have like you know, like the screen, internet, everything. Yeah, it's pretty good.
What have you found to be the most rewarding part of teaching?
I'd say the students actually like I you know I, now that I've been a while like I really you know I honestly love most of my students like they're like whether they're young or and they just want to have fun or whether even they're older and they're harder to deal with I yeah I do really really find the students great like they have a huge amount of respect for the teacher, which really helps. You know, you can see it that there's a lot of respect, and you know, I really appreciate it as my job. And you know, that the kids they'll want to listen, they'll do what they're told. And even when they, as I said, like you'll have a, so, you know, the older students aren't always going to be like that, of course. They'll still be pretty respectful. And they're also good kids, and some of them have quite difficult lives, and yeah, they put up with a lot of stuff. So yeah, like I think it's important to go in there and not think for yourself, but to really think for on their behalf. And then yeah, and then I think that's like the most rewarding thing is the students that you teach are pretty, yeah, fantastic.
sit back, relax, and enjoy a beverage or two as Simon discusses the challenges of learning Vietnamese and his experience of adapting to the culture in Vietnam, as well as his insights into Arsenal Football Club.
What do you like most about living in Ho Chi Minh City?
Ho Chi Minh City, yeah. It's known as by the locals as Saigon. So we, in Vietnam, it's common to call Ho Chi Minh City Saigon. But Saigon is a pretty great place. Like I must say, I love it here. It's got incredible energy. It doesn't sleep. It's like New York City. It's like it just goes. It has an enormous population. It's just like go. It's very energetic. It's very convenient. Like it's probably the most convenient place I've ever been to. Like you can just go downstairs and you'll have everything at your doorstep. You have food, you go to bars at your doorstep, restaurants, it's got this unique convenience because it's got such high density, but at your doorstep, you pretty much have everything, which is great. The coffee culture is one of the best in the world. Like the Vietnamese have really picked up on French, and now they have their own coffee. Like they'll drink like the coffee with condensed milk or black coffee. And Vietnam's got a huge one of the, I think it's like the second or third highest production of coffee in the world. So yeah, the city is just like littered with amazing coffee shops. It's pretty good value, and it has so many different levels. Like you'll have the cheapest coffee for like 20 cents or like 50 cents, and then it can go up to paying more than you would back home for a coffee. So yeah, and it's just like really, really convenient. It has a great like nightlife. Like you can, so many different levels. Like if you want to just drink beer on the plastic chairs, like I love to do that. You want to go to like the beer craft beer places. You want to go to restaurants. Like it's got everything. Yeah, really, really, it's really got pretty much everything you need. What else is there in Ho Chi Minh? Yeah, and good work opportunities as well. Like there's a lot of work for the people, which is the most important thing. It's not just like English teachers, but you know, Ho Chi Minh's the economy of Vietnam, and so many people come from the poorer areas to this city to kind of like make their life better. And it really does that, you know, it provides everyone with an opportunity, you know, and that's probably the thing I like the most about it. Like it gives everybody a bit of hope, you know, like the amount of people that have come from the countryside to Ho Chi Minh has, you know, that's why it's getting so big, is because it's giving them that opportunity. So yeah, I really am for that.
So the locals call it Saigon, not Ho Chi Minh City. Is Ho Chi Minh City, is that how it's referred to in Western societies? What is the reasoning around those names? Do you know?
Yeah. So in terms of that question, it depends, but the people who know Vietnam will call it, like in America, they'll probably call it Saigon as well because of the association there. People who have traveled to Asia and stuff will call it Saigon, but it's technically called Ho Chi Minh City, technically. So if you write on like on a paper or something, you're going to call it Ho Chi Minh City. Yeah, if you write Saigon, that would be incorrect. So you've got so the reason is because it used to be called Saigon before the war. And then when the North beat the South, Ho Chi Minh is the communist who is like the most famous leader in Vietnam. And he, you know, and he's not from Saigon, but he's from the North. And when they took over, they called it by his name. But in Vietnam, especially in the south of Vietnam, you won't hear Ho Chi Minh very much. But up in the north, you'll hear in Vietnamese like Ho Chi Minh City, yeah, Thành phố Ho Chi Minh, yeah, that's what they call it. So, but not down here. So, yeah. But yeah, it goes by two names. It generally has two names, with the exception of the paperwork where you have like to write Ho Chi Minh City.
How have you found, in terms of yourself learning Vietnamese, have you been able to like improve your Vietnamese over the last 4 years or so?
Probably started learning about 6 months into my time here, and I like picked up like some studies just like weekly with some Vietnamese friend who I live with, and then it kind of progressed, and then I found myself like a tutor or a teacher. And so at that point I paid a little bit more money to be with him. And the thing is, like, since I started my master's, I stopped studying Vietnamese, but I practice it a lot for a while. And it's a very, very difficult language. Like, it's a tonal language, so the tone totally changes the meaning of the word. But it was I did practice it for a while. And but yeah, it is so difficult that like sometimes I thought that my tutor was almost lying that what I was saying, because when I went outside on the street and try to practice, like people just like didn't understand me. Yeah, it's generally very tonal, and especially when you have like the foreign accent, like I obviously do. Like I sound like an Australian when I speak Vietnamese. Like to them, that it doesn't make any sense. So yeah, it's a hard one. Vietnamese, like a lot of foreigners don't bother, which is very sad. But I think I probably put in more effort than most. But and I'm not trying to be fluent anymore, or I'm not trying to be able to speak it well. So yeah, quite sad, to be honest. Yeah.
But do you feel like that experience is maybe even if the speaking is quite tricky, in terms of the listening, do you feel like you're able to comprehend what people are saying?
Depending on what they're saying, like I can, and my listening skills are okay, because I'm exposed to it a lot, and even the most subtle changes in the tone I do pick up now. But still, like there's it's just like basic stuff, really. So, I'll hear what people are talking about in some conversations, or, which is, in my opinion, I'm actually quite happy that I've got to that point, because so many people just don't go any further than the food or the drinks. So, yeah. But there's no pressure to learn Vietnamese. It's not really going to help your career. It's not, you're not expected to translate as an English teacher. Even if I know the word, I'm not really allowed to translate, because a Vietnamese person can do a better job than that anyway, if that makes sense. So there isn't that much pressure to learn it, even in a country where English is still not is it's still get they're still improving their English. But there, you can get by here without any Vietnamese at all. Yeah, you don't need to know any Vietnamese. So, but I enjoy, I really love studying it, and I think it's an incredibly interesting language. And yeah, it can be quite motivating to study it for that reason. Yeah.
And in terms of the tonal differences, what's a sort of a common example that you might come across?
So I have a couple of examples. Like, for example, MUA is like is the so the tone is over the vowel, so over A E I O U, so always over the vowel in Vietnamese. So MUA with no tone is mua. It means to buy something, like buy whatever. Mua is like MUA with a hook, It's like rain. And then more is like go down, more season. So, and then we have like BAN, BAN. And in Vietnamese, we have there's like a dot under the vowel. It's the lowest tone. So you've got to like get it out from your throat. It's like bang, bang. It means a friend or like you, but they usually refer it to as like friend. And then like and then bang means to sell, go up. Bang, like the opposite of buy, and then bang is table. So there's like so many different like, yeah, basically the tone just changes everything.
In terms of yourself moving to Vietnam, in terms of like sort of assimilating with getting used to a new culture, how did you find that transition?
That's a really good question. That's a complicated question. I would say it was pretty easy in terms of coming to Vietnam, finding a job and kind of being able to settle in. But in terms of like the cultural differences, they're very big. Like Vietnam is very different culture to probably anything I've ever experienced. Like they have their own way and they have their own style, and it's different to countries even close to to Vietnam. So yeah, like I really like their culture. Like they're very, it's a relaxed culture, like family orientated, like beer drinking, which of course is great. Coffee drinking, they got that from the French. Like the coffee here is fantastic. But it's a very closed culture, which means that you will never ever be considered to be like a Vietnamese person. You're always going to be like a foreigner, basically. And you're not going to get integrated into like the culture very heavily. But having said that, the people are friendly and like they will they and you know they'll do anything for you. And if you make friends, they'll be very loyal to you, and they'll look after you. So in that way, it's really, really pretty easy. Like and even if you are the outsider, you can still hang out with people from countries that you have more cultural similarities to. For example, like so many people who live in Saigon or in Ho Chi Minh City, they will just hang out with their foreign friends, for example, because you know that makes sense culturally. But in terms of actually integrating into the Vietnamese culture, that is almost impossible. Yeah. But doesn't mean that that you can't make lots of friends. And I have lots of friends from the country, and I've been all around and stuff like that. So, but yeah, that is one thing that is apparent, having lived here for 3.5, 4 years now, is that like that integration is not going to happen.
You visited 33 countries, is that right, Sam?
Yeah.
Why do you think you like to travel so much, and how would you compare sort of your travel experiences around the world to compared to where you're living in Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City now?
Yeah, I'd love to travel. Like I think most of the people that we like kind of grew up with always liked traveling as well. Like we weren't any like I wasn't any different, I guess. But yeah, I really love like I obviously wanted to like see places, but also like experience like the different cultures, and yeah, like just seeing more and more of the world, just especially back before when I had a bit more freedom, like it was just so fun. Like, and even if you went to a place that you didn't really necessarily like, it was you still went there and you still saw it and you still saw the culture. So yeah, I'm hoping that I can see a lot more countries as well, like in the future. But compared to Vietnam, Vietnam's quite a unique place for sure. I have traveled around Southeast Asia. I think Vietnam's pretty good. Like it's hard to compare. Like they're all different. Like there's not like I'd say like Vietnam is a amazing country. Like it's got everything. Like they're pretty blessed in terms of that, and like they have some cool cities. So I'd say it's definitely up there, but it's different to it's certainly not like a European country, or you know, they're very different. Like actually Ho Chi Minh's got a lot of Western things going on in the city, but it's unique to be like it's still within Vietnam. So but yeah, they're all places are fascinating, really.
You're a big fan of football, and you're Arsenal supporter, Perth Glory
Yes.
supporter.
Yes, that's right.
Have you been following them recently, and how is there much football that you can follow in Vietnam or play in Vietnam? Have you had much of that?
Of course I've been following the Premier League, and Arsenal finished fifth, which is an improvement from last season. We were eighth, but still I think a lot of supporters are a little bit disappointed that we didn't get in the Champions League. But we have like a young squad, and like Emile Smith Rowe, Saka, really talented young boys. And that's a good thing. And some of them came through the system. You know, they kind of grew up at Arsenal. And yeah, so I think like it's been an improvement, but still there's a lack of like maybe like self-belief, I guess, like to be confident to compete with like the big boys, right? Like it's been but yeah, I'm still happy with it, and I still, you know, follow them, and yes, I'm still like I'm hoping that next season we can get Champions League. As far as like football is massive in Vietnam. It's the only sport really. You know, And it's very easy to access Premier League. Like you can stream from your house if you want to for free, or you can just go to a local place. With even with the time difference, like it's a lot easier probably from here than from Australia. But the only problem is that I work on the weekends, so I often don't catch the games. But that's got nothing to do with like being able to access the football. So it's great. And then when Vietnam play football, they like the country stops basically. And even though they're not really that, you know, they're still improving. But the other week they played Thailand in like the under 23s Southeast Asian Cup, and they won. I think Vietnam are the best team in Southeast Asia, to be honest. And they have these things called like it's called something bao, and bao is like storm. They have like a people storm, so like the whole city is just like lit up with people wearing red and yellow, and it's completely crazy. Like the whole city is just like people like shouting, and you know, it's so they're very very passionate and like kind of like about their football. So yeah, it's real. And I also play football as well. I organize football at the moment, but it's not it's quite diff because of my work schedule. It's hard to play like at a good level, so it's more like a mixed bag of you know, like some of the foreigners who are, you know, not too bad, and then some of the Vietnamese as well. But it's really social and fun. And for example, tomorrow I'm the only foreigner playing with the Vietnamese guys. So, you know, I enjoy that too. Like they don't speak English or anything, but you know, it's good fun. And yeah, I'm trying to play a bit more football, but I'd say it's easy to play some football in Vietnam, but if you want to play good football, it's more difficult. You have to find like a team, and sometimes you have to My friend used to play at a good level, and he had to like drive really, really far and stuff like that. So, but yeah, you can, there's football pitches everywhere here, for sure.
We've arrived in Spain. Let's hear what Simon wants to do while he is here and what his plans are for the future.
Welcome to Spain. What do you plan to do while you're here?
I would want to like take like a bus tour and like around the like all the areas in the south of Spain, like Cadiz, Cordoba, Sevilla. And I would just want to have a low budget kind of like take bus and then stay in a in like the hostel equivalent and just like live that like you know that holiday, which is like very like kind of like backpackery kind of just like you know like no like strings attached, only because I did that like myself, but and I really like that. So for example, that like one day it's like, do I want to stay this day or do I want to leave or do I want to stay in Sevilla for longer? I would have no like kind of plan, but I would also in the back of my mind kind of know where I wanted to go.
What are your plans for the future?
Yeah, Ken. So I'm gonna well, I'm doing my master's at Swinburne. And I have to do some placements down in Melbourne. So in the next few months, I'll be trying to find a placement in a school, and my girlfriend's going to stay in Saigon, and we'll, you know, stay together. And then after I get through the placements and finish, we'll make a decision whether we want to, you know, come move to Australia together or whether I want to come back here and work for a few more years. So it's basically move to Melbourne or stay in Saigon for a few years, just work as a teacher, really. Yeah, so that's about it.
Thanks very much, Simon. That was great. Thank
No worries, mate.
you.
Yeah, I hope it was all right.
Was fantastic.
That was Simon Harris, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you had a good time. I have been your host and pilot, Kenneth Fairweather, and it was a pleasure having you on board. Safe travels, everyone.
Intertwining the stitching up.